Welcome to Network, a production of Evangelism Ministries of the Georgia Baptist Convention.
Welcome to Network, the show dedicated to helping pastors and churches cast the net of the gospel. I'm your host, Joel Sutherland. Thank you for listening in today. Scott Smith recently interviewed Dr. Jerry Vines, who is one of the speakers at our evangelism conference in just a few weeks. And we have a portion of that interview that we want you to hear today on our show. Now, stay tuned for the end of the show. We're going to tell you how you can get the whole interview. And it was 30 minutes of power-packed information for you as a pastor or church leader. So we want you to get that. Stay tuned for the end of the show, and we'll tell you where you can pick that up. But for now, listen to Scott as he and Dr. Vines talk about creating a culture of evangelism in your church.
As far as any kind of programming, I know that there's a certain aspect of this that it just needs to be contagious, but what kind of intentional things can a pastor do as far as programming or implementation or events or anything like that to see people baptized and to see more come to Christ? What are some things you've seen that work really well?
Well, you know, one of the things we did was we trained our people in personal witnessing, and we tried to do it all through our Sunday school. Now, there were times in our church training program that we had special courses available for people to be trained in evangelism, but we found out that the time you have the most people there is, of course, in Sunday school. So I wrote a few years ago a series of lessons on personal evangelism, and periodically, sometimes as much as every year and a half, we would teach those lessons to our people in Sunday school, everybody. And so, you know, instead of having something during the week and getting, you know, maybe a tenth of your people there, we had it on Sunday morning when they were all there. And so we taught them in our Sunday school, gave them evangelism training. But then also through our Sunday school, we set up a weekly visitation program. Now, you know, I'm aware that our culture has changed a bit, and that's not as maybe as easy to do as it used to be. But we had a speaking partner, silent partner approach to it. And so they would go out into the homes. Our young people surveyed the city of Jacksonville back in those years about one time every 2 years. And we took those prospects and fed them into the Sunday school classes. And then the Sunday school classes would take those prospects and would assign them to visitation teams. And we had the speaking partners, I said, and then the silent partner, or the praying partner. And that very often would be a new convert who didn't feel comfortable to say anything. And so they would just go along, and they'd be there to pray and to kind of clear the deck for the witnessing partner. And, of course, very often they'd get so excited when they'd see people come to Christ that they'd start speaking themselves. And so that's kind of the way we did it. So we did it through training in a special series of lessons, and then taking them out weekly in visitation.
We're going to take a short break here on Network, and when we come back, our team is going to talk about creating this culture of evangelism in your church, and we're also going to tell you where you can access that entire interview with Dr. Vines.
Well, Pastor, it is time again to mark your calendar for February the 25th and 26th for our annual Evangelism Conference, the biggest event, one of the biggest events of the year. We have a special website set up that's going to give you all the information that you need at 2013evangelismconference.com. Again, that's 2013evangelismconference.com. I want you to check that site out because this year is going to be a little bit different. We're going to be offering exclusive interviews with the speakers that are going to be available at that website. And also some information that you're going to find there that makes this year's conference a little bit different than anything that we've done before. I'm not going to give it all away just now. I want you to mark your calendar for February 25th and 26th, 2013. And I also want you to go to that website to get the latest scoop on what's going to be happening there. Again, that's 2013 Evangelism Conference. www.thebaptistconvention.com. We'll see you in February.
Welcome back to Network. I'm your host, Joel Sutherland, and I'm joined by our evangelism team, Scott Smith and Jonathan Jordan. Scott, in that interview, Dr. Vines talked about the importance of training in personal witnessing, and he had a unique approach with it, which I know both you guys would love to comment on, in that he did it through Sunday school, not necessarily the way we see a lot of churches do it, maybe with a discipleship class on a Sunday afternoon or whatever. What are some of the advantages to doing that through Sunday school?
I think the point that he made about wanting to hit everybody he could in his church instead of just barely 10%, if that. I think that's one of the things we need to take into this is how can I get the most amount of my people involved in evangelism training? Mm-hmm. I think that's a good paradigm shift.
Yeah, and we've had trouble with that, Jonathan, in the past because we have this unique term to Southern Baptist life. I don't know if anybody else in the world uses this term, so I'm going to throw it out at you. Dated material.
Dated material. dated material is a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. I'm currently teaching undated material, but dated material is fantastic. And for pastors and educators and people on staff, there's been a fear to miss a week.
Right.
Someone might find out. I don't know who, but someone might find out we're missing a week. But what we do when we drop evangelism training or any other something that kind of interrupts the flow of dated material, it raises the priority. It tells the church, from the pastor all the way down to bed babies, that this is important to the life of our church. This is important to who we are. And when you drop something, and I've dropped stuff in there of training because I wanted to not only teach the content, and the content is important. We want our people, as Sunday school is the evangelism arm of the church, we want them trained. We want them to know. But it also sends a message that this is important. We're not just to be comfortable. We want to train people in evangelism, and it raises the priority. And it's like every time it happens, you don't want to do it too much because you will unsettle some people, to put it lightly. Mm-hmm. But if you can drop in, like Dr. Vines was talking, once a year, this says it's important, which it should be to the life of the church, and clearly it made a difference in their environment.
Well, I think, too, dated material, we've got this system coming up where, we've got these 4 weeks through the book of Hosea or whatever the dating material may be. I always just tell my teachers or my Sunday school attenders, hey, just keep reading, man. Use that like a devotional. Keep reading right through that. We're not going to come back and try to recover that or try to cover, 4 weeks in 1 week. You just read through that like it's a devotional. Enjoy that on your time. Spend some time with your family, and we'll pick back up in 4 weeks. I think really there's value in that. Now you're encouraging them with personal devotions, and now we've got this evangelism training. I know it's true, and Scott, you mentioned it, I think, that Dr. Vine said one-tenth. You don't get one-tenth of your church to come to evangelism training. That would be wildly successful. You might get 100th or 150th of your church to come. But there's going to be people who are providentially hindered from coming at another time. I don't have a babysitter, whatever it may be. Sunday school catches people who would say, when you do personal evangelism training in Sunday school, who would say, you know what, I couldn't come any other time, but I appreciate you doing it now, I think. So there's some advantages to doing it in Sunday school. Now, he used a word that we used to hear a lot. We don't hear a lot anymore, I think the word still has meaning, and that's the word survey. Scott, can you still do surveys in this generation?
Yeah, I think you can. First of all, I would like to see those who complain that surveys don't work just try it once at all.
Right.
So don't blast it till you've at least tried it. I mean, when was the last time you mobilized your church to go canvas, a neighborhood or a subdivision next door with surveys? A lot of us haven't done it in a long time.
Right.
So first of all, we can't speak to whether or not it works in our area at all. But there are other ways that you can do surveys. First of all, let's talk about why you want to do a survey.
Right.
There's a lot more going on there than just, it's kind of a non-intimidating way to introduce the gospel. It is that, but it's a point of engagement.
That's right.
It may be the first point of engagement that anyone in your neighborhood has had with your church. Mm-hmm. And so it is non-intimidating. It's, hey, we want to do a survey. We're doing a survey of this neighborhood. you know, that says to them, you're not the only one. You know, we're not picking on you. We care about this community. We want to get out here. We're wanting to get involved. We want to hear from you. So it's a point of contact. But also, and this is something that probably doesn't get talked about a lot, it's kind of a micro commitment. Mm-hmm. You know, the big commitment we want them to make, and it is a big commitment to someone who hasn't been in a while, is come to church. That's mm-hmm. very intimidating mm-hmm. for a lot of people in our culture now, just to even show up to the plant. So let's give them a smaller commitment. Can you spend 5 minutes with me answering a few questions? Well, yeah, a lot of people can do that. And so I think there's something to be said there, and you might could speak to this more, but there's something to be said there about just getting me and this prospect on the same page around a survey.
Yeah, I think there's a whole dynamic that's going on, and really it's a longer conversation. It's one of those that I'd love to sit down and talk, and I know you would too, guys, sit down and talk with somebody for hours about. But the fact is, there's a dynamic going on when someone says, yes, I will take your survey. There's more going on than you taking a survey in that commitment. Some things are happening to them that really, you could not overstate the value of it. I know, Scott, you live here close. I live very close to the building. Jonathan, you're not too far out. Man, we live in such transient communities where we are. I mean, people are moving in and out. Gwinnett has a million people nearly that live in it here in Gwinnett County. And I know you may be listening to this, you're in rural Georgia, and you have to drive 5 hours to drive by a million people, but depending on where you are, you still live in a very transient community in all probability. There are a lot of movement. You go into a community and you think, well, I know everybody in that community. Well, you may not know everyone in that community.
I think one of the things too, Joel, and I do live in a smaller community outside of Gwinnett, and I was a part of a church one time that was not in the Atlanta area, not in the metro area, and we did a survey, and the church had been there for a long time, and everyone in the church had pride in the influence that they had in the community. They went out, asked some simple questions, like Scott said, some engaging questions, and there were many people on that survey that asked us, now, where are you again?
Right.
And right. When we came back to huddles, if you will, we use that language, we came back to huddles, the people that had done the survey, and it was three non-confrontational kind of questions that gave us some information. Our people, the people at that church, were shocked to find out how many people had come and gone, and people really didn't know where that church was. So the influence that church thought they had evangelistically and through ministry in that community wasn't there as much as they had assumed it was.
Well,
because the community had changed, like you said.
That's right. And so our minds trick us a little bit, guys, because here's what we think. In our minds, we say, oh, we just did something in that community, and it was 18 years ago when we did something in that community. But our minds tell us, well, we just did it the other day, and that's not true. And a lot's happened in that community. So he said a word in there I want to talk about just kind of before we close out. And I want to go back to this idea of surveys in this generation after this question. But he said the word prospects. Now we were talking off air about the value of prospects. And so few churches keep prospect files or a prospect roll. That's still a valuable tool in the evangelism arsenal of a church, of a Sunday school class, of a small group. Where are you going to go to find prospects? And well, let me just throw this out there. We know surveys are a good way to find prospects. Are prospects that important? What do you think?
Absolutely.
Huge.
Every convert was once a prospect.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think prospects are huge. And I tell you, one of the language that he used right behind that was they assigned those prospects to a Sunday school class. Mm-hmm. Many times churches get prospects. They put them over in a corner in a shoebox, and they're never. But he divided those prospects out to Sunday school classes, and those classes went after those people of like mind or age or however that small group or Sunday school class divided up. And they weren't over in the corner somewhere. And I've been to churches. They had 500 prospects, but nobody looked at them. He assigns them through the Sunday school, and they go out after them.
Yeah,
and that's it's tremendous to keep those prospects going in the church.
Right. There need to be written prospects. There need to be, you know, areas you go that are prospective.
Absolutely.
My daughter's small group, it grew because they went to the local park and played volleyball twice a night in the springtime.
Right.
And from there, they met people who became prospects that they invited to small group. And it doubled in a year because they went and played volleyball.
Sports teams. You know, anything.
Prospects are everywhere.
High schools.
That survey is important for that. So let's go back to that survey. let's say a pastor, guys, doesn't have the capabilities. He doesn't have a big youth group that can go out and knock on door, canvas communities, you know, big words like that. Are there some ways that we could engage communities in surveys for a smaller church, for a bigger church? I mean, we live in 2013 now. Is there a different way to do a survey?
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, if you're only doing surveys for the sake of personal contact, that's fine and good, and you ought to. But I know some guys are listening here that say, man, I could never get enough people in my church to go survey our community. But I'm telling you, and we didn't touch on this a great deal, but there is a great deal of feedback you get. Like Jonathan said, and I think what he said was so important, that we would probably, you could probably write a book on all the discoveries you'd make about everything Jonathan said about your church's reputation, influence in the culture, and also where the lost people in your culture, in your neighborhood, in your community are right now. So do one, even if you don't think you can, through your people. And one of the ways you can do that is to do, what is it called, an area drop? Or
you do a zip code drop.
Do a zip code drop.
Work with your post office. That can help you.
Get a postcard in the mail with a survey on it. You can set up a free online survey at surveymonkey.com. Mm-hmm. Go set that up. Keep it anonymous and leave an optional blank at the end that if you'd like to know more about our church, would you leave your name and number, your contact information? A lot of people would do that. Send to 1 mile, 2 miles radius, depending on how populated your area is and how much your budget can allow, and send a survey postcard out to your area, your neighborhood, your community, with just a link on it back to the Survey Monkey online survey, and you'll be able to gauge the interaction there and also get some really interesting feedback.
And Scott, here's what I would say, and I think both you guys would agree with this: send out the survey with the Survey Monkey link on it, with a QR code that takes you directly there, so you can do it from your mobile phone if you want to. Go ahead and put a QR code for your Facebook page or your Twitter feed or your website. Load that card up. But at specific, is there anything wrong with doing it that way?
No, as a matter of fact, everything that you mail or print needs to be one more opportunity for you to brand your church in the community.
Yeah,
to keep the name of your church in front of your community. So yeah, absolutely, it's a great opportunity to do that. And you know, I know this may be it's really not hard to do this, but you could even have a Facebook ad that links back to that survey and just target everyone within 25 miles of your town. Very easy to set that up on Facebook for just a few bucks.
And it fits the generation in which we live. But
absolutely,
again, as Jonathan said earlier, there's great value in doing the face-to-face survey. And there's no reason it doesn't have to be either or. It can be both and.
I think it's got to be both and. I think we have to. We used to talk about for years. We talked about what's the front door of our church. We did events and we did fall festivals and harvest festivals and we did Christmas Eve service. And those events, we need to have those. But there's also some digital front doors.
Right.
And it's not either or. I agree 100%. It's both. We've got to have some digital front doors as people are looking through churches through our websites now. It may be Facebook or Twitter or whatever, or just our in general website. It could be from a podcast, but to keep those other traditional front doors open as well, it's a both and. It's not either or.
That's right. Well, thanks for listening to the podcast. I'm going to let Scott close us out, and he's going to tell you where you can get this entire interview and where you can find out more about our 2013 Evangelism Conference.
Yes, you can get the rest of that interview with Jerry Vines and others at a website that we've set up just for the 2013 Evangelism Conference, and it's found at 2013evangelismconference.com. That's 2013evangelismconference.com. And of course, the conference is going to be held February 25th and 26th at the First Baptist Church of Douglasville, Georgia. You're going to hear Fred Luter, Jeff Yorge, Johnny Hunt, Robert Smith Jr., Ken Hemphill, Brian Fawcett, John Reed, and so many more. Worship by Daniel Cruz and also the Aikens family. We're going to have some giveaways this year. You actually might walk away with a free iPad mini. Who knows? So be sure to check out the website. We've got some bonuses, some downloads, and some interesting news there and updates that you may have not seen in previous conferences. So please go to the website today, 2013evangelismconference.com.
You've been listening to Network, a program dedicated to challenging believers to cast the net of the gospel. Network is a production of the Evangelism Ministries of the Georgia Baptist Convention.